Hello, gamers, and welcome to another exciting edition of Game Warp. I'm Elwood.
I'm Kim.
And tonight, with this episode, we're going to be looking at Thimbleweed Park. Right, so Thimbleweed Park, for those who don't know where, is a point-and-click adventure developed by Ron Gilbert and Gary Winnick. Two names that if you played any LucasArts games, you should already be very familiar with, as they worked on both Maniac Mansion and Secret Monkey Island. Ron Gilbert in particular was responsible also for developing the Scum technology, as well as doing games such as Total Annihilation and The Cave, which we've covered on a previous episode. And with Thimbleweed Park, this was a game that was crowdfunded. The two developers are working off their previous legacy to get the game published and out there, and in many ways it's been referred to as being a spiritual sequel to Maniac Mansion, which released way back in 1987. So if you're anything like myself, you'll probably have very nostalgic memories of those games, much like all the LucasArts games, which this is really a big throwback to in many ways. But Kim, I mean, with you, obviously, your gaming past, I mean, did you play a lot of the point-and-click adventures of the LucasArts era, such as, you know, Sam & Max and Day of the Tentacle? Those sorts of games?
I played a little bit of Sam & Max maybe a few years ago, but not a whole lot more. I'm not really into point and click, to be honest. And so, you know, this goes to show that this is completely your choice that I went right along with. I mean, I don't have a problem with point and click. I mean, we've covered point and clicks before on the channel, and the previous two that we've covered, Dark Side Detective and Cathy Rain, were pretty fun. I mean, they were very unique in their own way. Obviously, they had, you know, some little flaws here and there as well. Point and clicks tend to, you know, have that reputation of being a little far-fetched sometimes with their puzzles, and, you know, just, you know, having that concept that if you can't figure it out, you just kind of throw everything at it and until you kind of get there, or you can use a second path, try to figure it out, which probably will lead to a lot of circles if you're, you know, not as logical like myself, or, you know, at least not so punny with things sometimes.
The plot itself sees two FBI agents, Ray and Rays, arriving at the town of Thimbleweed Park to investigate a murder, and over the course of the game you take control of various characters as you uncover the mysteries of within this small town. Again, very much a throwback to Maniac Mansion, which also used the multiple character system, and again, which we also saw in Day of the Tentacle, which use the multiple character system to great effect, as you use multiple characters often at points to work together to bypass the flaws or the areas where they might not be able to bypass to solve puzzles. So I was looking at the game, I mean, as I said right from the start, I mean, the game itself looked visually like a throwback to those old LucasArts point-and-click games, and certainly, you know, coming up and playing games on the Amiga and the 486, it was always exciting to have a point-and-click adventure. They always seemed like something a lot more special than everything else that you were sort of playing. There seemed to be a lot more happening there, and certainly with the humour, especially with those LucasArts games, it just really sort of heightened the experience, and probably why they're still so fondly remembered and still so playable now. So to obviously have two key figures of that era decide to come back and crowdfund a game which is very much a throwback to that era, it was certainly a lot of excitement, certainly an exciting prospect for myself. And looking at the game as well, I mean, we've got here, we've got these two FBI agents that look exactly like Mulder and Scully. We've got the small town hiding big secrets, so we've got that Twin Peaks vibe in there. So tapping into a lot of things that I was really liked. So I was actually quite excited to get into this one. And Kim, I mean, obviously this isn't your area that you're obviously familiar with, so I mean, just in terms of like gameplay to begin with, I mean, how did the game actually play for yourself? Because I found it to be a very sort of traditional sort of, you know, point and click experience, you know, find item, find place to put item, you know, and humorous asides along the way. So
in terms of point and click, it's fairly like the mechanics play pretty much the same. But I think, like, you know, one of the things that were a bit different, I think, from the previous times is that this time it's, like, you have to kind of put a sentence together, this kind of thing. Like, you have to play who does what, kind of, like, you're playing one character because there's multiple characters, right? So then you have to click an item, and then the action that you can do will flash at the bottom, and you can choose the action of what you want to do with the item. So you kind of, like, place things together in order to make this work as a point and click. it's, you know, fairly normal to what you do. I think the structure is more like, because it has that, I guess it's like the layout of the screen that you see. It's a little bit different, I guess, in that sense. Like, they try to make it a little bit more maybe accessible. I don't know. Like I said, I don't play a lot of point-and-click games, and I have a really crap memory, so I don't really remember how Cathy Rain and Dark Side Detective was structured, but I feel like it was different, because something about this doesn't feel as smooth sometimes. Like, when I want to do something, sometimes, like, I click it, and it doesn't react, and it gets me a little frustrated after a while, but I don't know. It might be just because I hit some bug or something like that.
Well, the certain refreshing thing for the game is that you can play either on casual or hard mode. Casual focuses more on the story, and the puzzles have many of the steps taken out of them, where hard mode is a real throwback to those classic point-and-click adventures where you have to get creative with some of the problem-solving, and there's a lot more steps to the actual puzzles. And it's for those who want like a more fulfilling experience, then hard is definitely the way to go. But if you're looking for something a lot more quicker, then the casual mode does give you that option of being able to just sort of breeze through the game and focus more on the story. However, at the same time, we're sort of faced at the end of the game with the fact that we end up with all these items that you still pick up and end up being like red herrings almost, as they have no use in the game, but nobody's bothered to take them out of the game. So you're still picking up items, which in many ways I could see being more frustrating, because it essentially gives you more things to just throw against the wall when you hit those blocks. Whereas if you're doing the hard mode, you're finding where to slot in items a lot sooner than you would if you were playing this in a casual mode. So, but at the end of the game, your little inventory is going to be a lot more empty than it is when you're playing casual, which seemed like an unusual move, but, you know, I appreciate the fact there is a casual mode, because not everybody likes to be as frustrated as these games often have a legacy of being.
So the question now I'm going to ask you is, did you play it in casual or hard?
I played it on hard, just okay. Because it seemed that if every time they throw out like an easy mode, and I think this is from the curse of like playing games on like the PlayStation, where you play like easy mode and then you would get like half the game, you would get to like the halfway point and go and say, no, you ain't going any further, you've got to go back and play this on normal. So because of that, I've always played games like normal or whatever version is, which obviously in this case is hard. So probably for my sins, it took me probably a lot longer playing this game to get anywhere than it did you, Kim, because I believe you played on casual, because, you know, you got life outside of these games.
Well, I also had a deadline, so it was kind of like, you know, I realized Thimbleweed Park was leaving the Xbox Game Pass on PC, obviously, because you had it for much longer than I did.
Oh, yeah, it's still on
So I ended up, like, realizing this, like, 4 days away from it being done, and I had to somehow find it was a good amount of hours to get through this, because I had to consider the fact that even on casual, I would get stuck. So, it's more like that than the fact that, you know, I chose casual more for that, but then I still got really confused at times with a lot of stuff, so I'm pretty happy I went on casual mode, because in hard mode, I would have never finished the game.
Yeah. I mean, to the game's credit, it does obviously avoid that trap of falling into impossible logic, such as the also memorable monkey wrench puzzle on Monkey Island, which obviously makes no sense to us Brits, because we don't call a wrench a monkey wrench. It's just a wrench, so we wouldn't think to use a monkey as a wrench. So I give the game that sort of credit, but at the same time, there is some real unique thinking at play when it comes to some of these puzzles, so I think it's hard to say. This is the problem as well with the game. It spends a lot of time saying, like, making all these references to, like, LucasArts games and having these throwback moments, which is, you know, it's fine for, like, the first hour, but once you get past it, it's like, oh, we're just doing the same joke again, and we are. That's great. And at the same time, I kind of wish that if you're going to, like, do an X-Files reference, you do a Twin Peaks reference, try and, like, really run with it instead of just, like, playing it like you're almost plagiarizing someone else's ideas, because obviously with our two agents, it's like you look at them and it's like, oh, look, it's Mulder and Scully, but that's basically all you get. It's just two characters who look the same, and these aren't particularly attractive sprites, it has to be said. And even for a crowdfunded game, you would have thought that with the powers of technology we have now, that the game would look a little prettier than it does. And these giant bobble-headed characters just were so unappealing to work with, especially when you compared it to other sort of games that we've seen previously within the genre, and even more recent titles such, you know, like Cafe Rain, and perhaps to an extent like Darkside Detector, which you mentioned already, has to add more enjoyable sprites to look at than we the ones we get here. I don't know about yourself, Kim. I mean, how did you feel about these, how these characters looked?
I mean, the characters are okay. I mean, the looks or whatever. I mean, it doesn't bother me too much. For me, it's more, you know, like, they're rather normal characters, right? You know, like, the detectives are have kind of, like, a feud against each other, and then, you know, there's this whole, you know, father-daughter deal going on with, you know, the, one of the ghost characters and a computer developer, a game developer. And then, you know, you have, you know, the foul-mouthed clown who can't take off the makeup because of a curse, you know. And there's enough contrast between them to kind of, like, give them some more character. Maybe not, like, the appearance of the characters themselves. I feel like a lot of Thimbleweed Park was okay, you know. Like, it was, the characters were not memorable. I think, like, I played the game before recording. I mean, I played the game, like, maybe a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you, I had to go and look up the names again, because I couldn't remember them anymore. I have bad memory, but usually not that bad. So, characters are okay. You know, some of the characters, it's like, you know, they do the beeping for the, you know, Ransom the Clown, and gets very annoying because he's like a very foul-mouthed clown, so there's a whole lot of beeping at a certain point.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and he gets really angry. And it's just, it gets a bit absurd sometimes. Everyone, I think I enjoyed Ray and Reyes more because they're more like, you know, smart mouth, and one is kind of like, you know, just more mellow in general.
Yeah, yeah. I understand what you're saying. I mean, it did obviously throw me a bit at the beginning, the fact that you were given a character. And just by going through the basic sort of tutorial of this character, the character ends up dying. Which isn't really a spoiler, as it's sort of the main, one of the main gist of the actual plot here. And I thought that, oh my goodness, this is going to be like a Sierra game where you can die, compared to like the LucasArts games where you couldn't die. You could just like try a lot of stuff and not have to worry about dying. Whereas the Sierra ones, you made like one fatal sort of missed move on it, and then you sort of screwed the game up completely. So I was kind of relieved that that wasn't the case here. So
I think they were just doing it to kind of like, one, to do the tutorial, and two, to kind of like just kind of throw you for a spin a little, just to do that, you know. I mean, the game itself, you know, like the narrative and the story is actually pretty good. I mean, I have to give credit where credit is due, and I think the story is one of the reasons why I kept playing it. I mean, there is a lot of humor in the dialogue, and it tries to break a lot of like fourth walls type of thing by, you know, just in general, the dialogue and using it as humor and having a lot of puns, and, you know, there's little details that you need to catch in order in the dialogue between like characters and stuff to solve the puzzles. But I mean, the story itself is really interesting, because there's this, like, I guess there's this twist where, you know, you start off as a murder mystery and it changes into something else because you solve the murder mystery within the first half of the game. And then you move on to, you know, more of the secrets, because there's so many secrets that it kind of like brings the detectives back to the location to kind of, you know, and that's, you know, really when the game becomes more interesting, because you start seeing like all those suspicious characters that you have, and, you know, why is like, you know, the sheriff is like the coroner, and why is there so many, why does he play like 50 different roles and just in different get-ups and stuff like that? it's entertaining in its own way, because it adds so much mystery to what this town really is. And, you know, this, you know, like, what's the deal with, you know, Pillatronics and, you know, the fire, and everything kind of like just all comes together at the end. So, you know, props goes to definitely, like, the storytelling and the story that they put together here.
I think the problem I have is, because, I mean, I played this on Xbox, and just obviously looking at whether this is available, I mean, it's obviously available on PC, which obviously has the advantage of the mouse, so that'd be good. And at the same time, it's also available on the Switch, which I could see it being a much more enjoyable experience, having a much more sort of intimate sort of feel to the game that the Switch obviously provides with its handheld mode.
Yeah.
And it's the problem when I'm playing this game on the Xbox. Obviously, the controller, it just feels like it takes forever to do anything. Because you're having to scroll with a controller.
Yeah, because the clicking action is more hindered, right? Like for me, it's like you really feel it because you're moving the mouse and you click the action, you click the item, you throw it onto whatever you need to throw it on.
So you can probably add like another 10 hours onto your gameplay if you're playing this on console. So like, just go all the way up here and stuff. It just really didn't work for me, the actual control option. For some reason, I can feel it would be a lot more effective on the Switch. So I'd be keen to obviously go back and revisit this on the Switch and see if it would provide any sort of different experience at all. And certainly, it's the sort of game that would be fun to sort of kill some time with if you're like going somewhere. It's the sort of game you can sort of lose yourself in. But where if you're playing this more in your sort of gaming block, it doesn't quite provide the sort of same immersiveness that you want from a console game, which is kind of a shame really, because we have obviously done other similar games like this, and obviously we did The Cave as well, which was on console as well.
I was just thinking about, you know, The Cave. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I was just thinking about The Cave and you talking about, you know, the different characters.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the difference is, you know, The Cave, we don't actually have these characters talking to each other, but they're so, like, quirky and fun that their adventure feels so much more, you know, I don't know what you call it. It feels more like an adventure than this one.
Certainly with The Cave, it responded a lot better to the limitations of the console. I mean, the fact that you're controlling characters and moving around in a more sort of traditional way for console, so it worked a lot better with the controls there, and certainly with the multiple character interaction, you know, being able to switch through and have set the characters do, you know, maximize their skills. I think it certainly worked a lot better than obviously you were point and click. You have to move the mouse around and select the actions and things. And I think I was grateful at least that it wasn't one of those titles where you're going to play Hunt the Pixel to find the exact spot to do something, just to have it come up with that hidden secret option. So I was kind of grateful for that, especially when you're trying to maneuver a point around with a controller. It's not the easiest of things, I'll tell you that much. So that was from Wii Park. I mean, it is obviously available now on both Windows as well as consoles. You can go on Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch. As of the time of recording, it is available through the Game Pass as well, so you can check it out that way. And it is also saying it's available on Android and iOS as well. So definitely plenty of ways to pick it up and enjoy that game. So, but what do you want to rate this one, Kim?
I would say the story gave it a really big boost. So I'd say like a 3 out of 5 for me. It really all comes down to the story. I really, really enjoyed the story so much that I would give it, like, I thought it was, you know, fairly creative and fairly, like, there were some nice twists. And I did enjoy a part of the humor. I'm into that type of humor. So it is pretty decent. I still think it's not quite as good as the other point-and-clicks we've looked at, like Dark Side Detective and Cathy Rain, and even in terms of, like, adventure games, I don't think it quite lives up to The Cave either. It's okay, you know, like, it's a decent game to kind of kill some time, but I think it had a lot to do with the fact that I did do this in, like, kind of a speed run, even though my speed run was, like, 10 hours, but... But, you know, I mean, it was decent. I wonder if it would have made a difference if I took more time and just did the hard mode, like you said, so it would be more of, like, a deeper experience, like, some of these things connected better, because I still found some of the puzzles a bit far-fetched. That's my thoughts on it. What about you?
Same as yourself. It's a 3 out of 5 that would give this one. It just didn't connect the way that I wanted it to, and certainly it is very much a throwback to the games of old, when certainly we have 2 designers who worked on said game, so you would have thought that they would really have had the magic touch here to to, if anyone's going to do a sort of throwback title to that era, that the that they would have been able the ones to do it. But when so much of the game is referencing what was, and it's mistaking it from humor rather than a reference, it really sort of detracts a lot from the game. And that, combined with some awkward controls and far from the most best looking sprites that we've seen, especially in more modern sort of point and click adventures, so it really just stopped me getting into it more. But as like yourself, I would give it a 3 out of 5, and probably one that would return to and look at perhaps in a different platform. Maybe I'd have a better and more fulfilling experience from it, and certainly appreciate what the game does do well. So thank you as always for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please do hit the like and subscribe button, and don't forget to obviously follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and we're also on Instagram as well. Also leave us a review, let us know what you think of the show. It all helps raise the profile of the show. Obviously, if you would like to check out our archive and also see the other fun bits of writing and that we do as well, you can do on our blog, which we can find at working
at gamewarpblog.wordpress.com.
Thank you. And on there, as I said, you can find our reviews and articles, and as well as our archive of episodes as well. Thank you as always for listening. Thank you to my co-host Kim. Until next time, thank you for listening.